This is Digital Story Podcast number 708, October 8th, 2019. Today's theme is What Bicycle Repair Taught Me About Photography. I'm Derek Story. If you've listened to any of my Nimble Photographer podcasts, you know that I believe we can improve our pictures by learning lessons from musicians, illustrators, and writers. But from mechanics too? Oh yeah. This week's photography podcast features a 1982 Peugeot racing bike, a perennial flat tire, and a lesson well learned. I hope you enjoy the show. A while back, I bought a 1982 Peugeot course bike from Craigslist. And what I was doing, I wanted a bike that I could take on the train. Those of you that use public transportation will know what I'm talking about. The bike that you take on the train, you know, so you ride it to the train station and you go on the train with your bike and you go to wherever you're going. And then you get off and then you have your bike to ride around and do stuff. And then you take it back to the train and back home you go. Any of you that have done that, you know that bike has to be different than your other bikes because it will get abused. That's just sort of the way it is. So my thinking is that I would buy a pre-abused bike for, you know, a very affordable price. And then that way I'm not worrying about it. You know, I'm not worrying about people crashing their bikes into mine while they're hanging them up on the hooks in the train and all that kind of stuff. I started shopping on Craigslist like any normal American would do. And I found this 1982 Peugeot, and it was a very good price. And so I called up the guy, and the first thing that he asked me was, how tall am I? Which I thought was kind of interesting. And so I said, I'm 6'7". And he goes, all right, great. Come on over. So I guess that this particular bike, he said that it had a large frame, and he may even have put how many inches it was, 25 inches or whatever, but I don't recall right now. This was a while back. So I went over there to check it out, and this bike was really cool. The Peugeot course was a racing bike, and Peugeot made some really cool frames. They're double butted. They're really, you know, well made. But yet, especially for a bike that's as old as this bike, it was incredibly light. It's incredibly light. In fact, I think it's lighter than, you know, any of my other bikes. Now, I don't own racing bikes. I own mainly, you know, urban bikes and hybrid bikes. So it's not super surprising that this Peugeot racing bike was lighter than my other ones. But still, you know, 1980s, that's kind of cool. Right away, I liked this bike. I liked the way it looked. It was the right amount of beat up, so I wouldn't have to worry about it. Adjusted the seat and I got on there and rode it around a bit, and it was so comfortable. It was so nice. I just felt like it was designed for me. So I took it. I bought it. And I thought, this is going to be fantastic. Now, it was a little bit of a project. It needed some things, so I had to work on the brakes a bit and put on new pads and adjust them. And it needed a new gear cassette, which is not a fun thing to change on a bike that's, you know, on the back hub there where derailleur moves chain onto the different sprockets. That's the gear cassette where those sprockets are. It needed a new one of those. I had one, and so I was able to do that. I had the tool and all that. Needed a new front rim and it needed some new tires, and I found these super cool gum-walled tires, very classic. Looks like it would have came on the bike when you bought it in 1982. I did all of this work. It was ready for a quick dash downtown. So at this point in the story, you may be wondering, why are we talking about this bicycle, right? Why aren't we talking about what this bicycle taught you about photography, or is there even a connection? Well, actually, there is. But in order for it to make sense, I have to tell you this delightfully entertaining anecdote first before we get to the lesson. Alrighty, so that's where we are. We're about halfway through this right now. So I took it for a nice dash downtown, and It was really cool. And I saw a friend down there who also likes cycling and got a big thumbs up. He goes, man, that's one cool bike, you know, and he asked me a little bit about it. So I was feeling pretty smart, pretty happy until the next morning. And the next morning, I went out to the garage to get something. And I noticed that the tire was flat on the Peugeot. And of course, it was the back tire. It's always the back tire, right? Just like whenever there's wind, it's always headwind. Even when you're coming back, it's still a headwind, you know, no matter what. So always seems to be the back tire that goes flat. And I go, oh, man. So I was really busy that day and the next, so I couldn't get to it. Weekend comes, and I changed the tire. And it was really interesting because actually I changed the inner tube. And I was checking the tire, and I was going, I couldn't find the puncture. And I was going, that's weird. Maybe I just ran over something and it didn't stick in the tire. But it made me a little nervous and I started questioning the tube. So instead of patching the tube, I just went ahead and replaced it. So I went through the whole rigmarole of replacing the tube, putting the back tire back on, getting everything lined up again, all that stuff. Pumped it up, and once again, I was happy. I said, okay, now I got that out of the way. It won't happen again for a long time. And I decided to use it for my errands that morning. So then I was really happy. Until the next morning when I went out there, and it was flat again with a whole different inner tube and nothing in the tire. So I'm just like going nuts about this. Like, you know, I cannot believe this happened. It really sort of bummed me out. So this time, I had to wait a while before I changed that tire again. I said, I'm putting you up on the rack. I will come back to you later, okay? I'm going to ride these other bikes that don't get flat tires right now. So I actually ignored the bike for a month or so. And then I decided, okay, now it's time. I had a Saturday afternoon where I had like half an hour. I said, you know, I'll just go ahead and take care of this. I changed it again. And again, the next day, the tire was flat. So at this point, I'm going, I cannot figure out what I was thinking. Maybe now I know why the guy sold it, right? This thing's haunted. It's got a curse on it or something like that. That's why he sold it to me. I thought he's just a nice guy, you know, thinning out his bike collection. No, this bike is haunted. And he sold me a haunted bike that will always have a flat back tire no matter what I do. So this time I just left it for a long time, like 3 months. I didn't even look at it, didn't want to touch it. I just said, you know, you just stay right there and, you know, use my other bikes for my errands and my getting around town. Finally, this weekend, this last weekend, I said, I'm going to give it one more shot. I had one more inner tube left. So down to my last inner tube. And I said, I am going to put a fresh tube on. I'm going to be very careful. I'm going to meticulously check everything. I'll put this tube on. And if it doesn't work, then I'm taking it to the bike shop and going to give the cursed bike to someone else to work on. So I did everything. It was very meticulous. I spent like 45 minutes on this. It was a long time to change a tire on a bike. Sure enough, the tire was flat. So I put it in the van, and I took it home. Getting ready, I was just going to take it to the bike shop next week. I'll just have it in the van ready to go. My brother-in-law visits. I have three brother-in-laws, actually. This brother-in-law, his name's Chris. I don't see him very often. But when he blows into town, he usually hangs out for a while. And he blew into town on Sunday. Actually, blew into town on Saturday while I was going through this hell. But he was going to stay overnight, hang out at the house, and hang out on Sunday. So I said, great. Okay, good. So we were talking on Saturday night about bikes and stuff because he's a cyclist and a very good cyclist. He's been, you know, riding seriously for a long time. And I told him the story of my Peugeot. And I said, I can't figure it out. And he goes, well, let's take a look at it. We'll figure it out. I'm really good at this stuff. Now, I'm a guy that's been working on bikes since I was a kid, right? And I used to take bikes apart, you know, all the time. I'd borrow my dad's tools without asking him, which was another story in itself. And I would take bikes completely apart. And then sometimes I even got them, you know, all back together. But I've been doing this for a long time. And I feel like I know a fair amount about bicycles. Just like I feel like I know a fair amount about photography. Okay. I sort of feel like the two are parallel in terms of my knowledge. And so when he offered to help me, you know, I just said, you know what, if this guy can help you, you know, he's going to donate his time and, you know, he could be doing all sorts of other things right now and working on my bike, you know, probably isn't at the top of his list, but if he's going to be kind enough to offer his help and his expertise, you should accept it. And so I did. I said, that would be great. I would really appreciate it if you take a look at it. So we go out there and he breaks it down, and he was already like moving twice as fast as I do on this thing. So I was going, okay, this guy definitely knows more or has more practice than me at doing this. Has the back wheel off, breaks down the tire, gets it off, takes the inner tube out. He's inspecting the tube, trying to find where it is. We get a bucket of water, look for the bubbles, all that kind of stuff. We find it, and he's going, yeah, you definitely have a puncture here. But again, we couldn't find anything in the tire. So then he says, well, let me look at the rim. So he's looking at the rim, and the rim has, the spokes are ratcheted in. And, you know, they were a little pronounced on the inside of the rim, you know. So he's looking at those, and he's going, you know, if there's enough pressure against the back of these spokes here, that could do it. And I had a rim liner on there, but it was old and it was kind of crappy. And it was like one of those big, you know, rubber bands that had deteriorated in a couple places. And he goes, you know what I think your problem is? I think you need some rim tape here. And I think it's the spokes, when the pressure is being put on them, the back of the spokes are ruining your tube. And I was going, all right, that sounds interesting. So we went to the bike shop and we got some really cool bike tape. So first of all, I didn't even know this kind of bike tape existed. I had always just, you know, had like the terrible, you know, rubber rim liners, looked like a piece of inner tube. And this is actual tape, nice thick cloth tape. And it's the precise length of the rim. You get it for, in my case, 700 series. You get it, and it's just the right length. It has a hole for the valve stem to go through, the whole deal. And it was French, too, which just seemed, okay, right away, that seemed totally appropriate. So we got a couple rolls of this, because I figured if this worked, then I'm going to have it for the front rim, too. And so we went back to the house, and he meticulously put the tape on. Very nicely done. It looked really good. So now we had this barrier in between the rim and the inner tube. And then we took a brand new inner tube. And then I watched the way that he did this. So I always sort of struggle putting the inner tube and tire back on the rim. And he says, oh, no, let me show you how to do it. And we don't use any tools at all. Because if you use any tools, even the little tire wrench, you could damage the inner tube and then you're back to where you started. And so what he did was he put the tire on first, just with his hands. Then he took the inner tube and he put it, you know, he kind of worked it in all the way around. And he inflated the inner tube just a little bit so it had a little bit of girth to it, but not too much. Got it in there. The tire was already, you know, on the rim. So then all he had to do was just sort of pinch everything in and then inflate it a little bit so that seams beaded with the rim there. It took him like 2 minutes to do this. No tools, no damage to the inner tube at all, and it worked perfectly. Now at this point, I'm feeling kind of good about this process. Flated the tire all the way. I rode it that afternoon, Sunday afternoon, and I went out there this morning into the garage, and the tire is still perfectly inflated. Absolutely inflated, beautifully. It looks great. So Chris solved my problem. You may be wondering, so what does this have to do with photography? Well, actually, it has a lot to do with photography for me. And I think part of this is also because I'm coming off the workshop season and getting ready for the next one. Whenever I do a workshop, one of the things that I think, and I try to make it a point to tell the people that are attending this workshop with me, how much I learn from the participants at every workshop. And it really dawned on me that a big part of what I do in anything, whether it's in photography or cycling or any line of work at all, writing, that I always have to keep an open mind to learn from someone else and not be an expert. Not be an expert. In fact, I would rail against that term if it were applied to me in anything at all. I think that being considered an expert is really a disservice to the teacher. And the reason why is because I feel like that once you start thinking of yourself that way, then you begin to close the door just a little bit to learning new things. And I see this in photography more than I see it in any other part of my life, where people learn a technique or they learn a fact about lenses or cameras, sensor sizes, lighting, depth of field, you name it. They learn something and then they are an expert at it, or they've mastered it, or they know it. And they close the door a little bit to anything that might challenge the way they view that particular technique or that particular piece of equipment. And that is always the beginning of the end. So after we went through this whole thing, and he taught me all sorts of stuff on Sunday afternoon. Not only did he teach me about the tire thing and fix my problem, but I picked up all sorts of stuff. I mean, I just started asking him questions while we were working on this project. You know, I started asking him even some silly stuff that, you know, I always felt like I should know the answer to. For example, like his bike was there, the bike that he had just done a 66-mile race with. The racing bikes a lot of times have fewer spokes than, you know, the bikes that you and I ride. And I always wonder, why do they have fewer spokes? I mean, I had my theory, and if someone would ask me, I probably could come up with something. But I never really asked someone who knew, why does your bike have half as many spokes as mine? And, you know, he says it's really silly. He says part of it is weight. You know, you save a few grams here, which he says, you know, is really kind of ridiculous when you think about it. And then part of it is air resistance, less air resistance, you know, with fewer spokes. Now, I don't know for a fact or not if that answer is absolutely correct, but it's more information than I had before I asked him. And it is a question, in all honesty, that I had always been too embarrassed to ask people. And so I was in a learning mode and I asked him and I got, you know, more information. And the whole afternoon was like that. I just learned a bunch of stuff. So as I sit here on Monday talking to you, I'm a more knowledgeable cyclist than I was on Saturday afternoon. And I also know that there's a whole bunch of other stuff that I don't know just from what I've learned. And I think this can be so helpful with our photography and with the other aspects of our artistic endeavors, to remember to be open, to ask questions. Remember that pride can get in the way of learning and moving forward. And don't let that little voice in you say, don't ask that question because, you know, it'll make you look like you're not as smart as people think you are, or you're not as knowledgeable as, you know, you want to be. Fight that off. Ask the question. Be opening to learning. And then thank the person for teaching you when you've learned new things. And I made sure that I thanked Chris, you know, 3 or 4 times before he left for teaching me everything that he did on that afternoon and making my cycling life a lot better. So to me, that's what cycling and this particular incident has to do with photography. And learning that lesson with Chris in the bicycle definitely gave me food for thought last night when I'm thinking about my photography, thinking about my teaching, thinking about these reviews I'm working on, and just remembering to make sure that I present what I know, or what I think I know, but at the same time, when someone challenges me on that stuff, to be open to what they have to say, because I may not have the whole story, or I may even have some misinformation, and other people can help me with that and make me better at what I do. Our LA street photography experience is featured on the Olympus Workshops page. This is just kind of a fun thing here. Our co-leader for the workshop that's coming up in March in LA, street photography experience, is Mike Baining. And Mike Baining is an Olympus educator. And so by extension, Olympus took an interest in our workshop, and we're actually featured on their workshops page, which is really kind of neat. You know, we're listed in the Learn and Support section of the official Olympus website. And I have the link to our workshops page in the show notes. So you can just click on the link and you can go over there. They did a nice job. They picked one of my shots. The write-up looks really good. And I also think it's kind of cool that, you know, this workshop passes muster. Thanks to Mike for helping us pass. He gives us some street cred with Olympus for sure. I know Olympus quite well. I've worked with him for a long time. And I just think it's kind of fun for us to be on that page, on the official Olympus site. This three-day event is March 13 through 15. We're going to explore classic Los Angeles locations and architecture. We're going to go as far west as Venice Beach. I hope to take you over to Santa Monica Pier as well. We'll look at some famous movie spots and explore back streets of this fascinating Southern California area. You can learn more about it just by clicking on the links right here in the show notes. I have a link that'll take you right to the information and registration page, or I have a link that just takes you to thenimblephotographer.com. You can just go there and click on workshops. Or if you want, you can go to the Olympus site and see our workshop there. Mike is fantastic. That's the only way I can put this. Those of you that have worked with him at our San Francisco street photography workshops, which we did for 6 years, know how great Mike is. He helped us with all of those. And now he's taking all that knowledge and we're going to go south with it. And not only is he an official Olympus educator, he's an accomplished street photographer, and he's going to bring some goodies for us to test and play with at the workshop. This is something that if you enjoy urban photography, if you want something a little different in your portfolio, come join us in March. You can get all the information in the show notes. I found a bargain for you. The SanDisk 500 gigabyte extreme portable USB 3.1 Type-C external SSD. That's a mouthful, isn't it? I have been using one of these drives, this exact drive, actually, for a year now. And I have to tell you, I just love it. They have it on sale right now at B&H for $89. So that's $50 off. That's $50 instant savings. They're running it on special right now. And what's so cool about this external SSD is that it is super small, first of all. It comes with a USB-C connector, and it also comes with an adapter, just a little adapter that goes over the connector, so you can use it with regular USB computers as well. So you don't have to have a USB-C compatible computer, you can just have a regular computer and use it with that. But what's so nice about it, it is super light, it's super portable, it's like way smaller than your phone, right? Way thinner than your phone, way lighter than your phone. So you can just slide it anywhere in your backpack or your camera bag, anywhere that'll fit. But it's also fast. And what I've been using it for is I put my Capture One Pro libraries on there, my catalogs on there, on this little SSD for when I'm traveling. So I have, you know, some of the catalogs for whatever projects I'm working on at the time, in case the client calls me while I'm, you know, somewhere off, way far away from my studio. I have all their work right there on this little SSD that I can carry around in my front pocket of my pants. I can plug it into the computer and I can get them what they need. The other thing about it, and this is the joy of, you know, solid state drives, is that I can put the Capture One library on this drive, and performance is just as good as when I have that library living on my internal Mac SSD drive, right? So there is no performance hit at all by putting, you know, my libraries on this external drive. I just think they're great. They're great for backing up. They're great for carrying content with you that you don't want on your computer, but that you may need access to when you're on the road. They're great for working on movie projects. Yeah, just everything, everything. So I'm going to get another one, and I found this deal, and I thought I'd share it with you. There's a link to it in the show notes. $89 for 500 gigabytes. They also have larger models too with more capacity, but the best deal is this $89 for the 500 gigabyte. If you need more capacity, pick up a couple, right? Pick up a couple. They're really handy, and you will love having one if you don't already. Just a little bit of a virtual camera club business. So first of all, a big thanks to our Inner Circle members, the folks that support us month in and month out. Thanks so much, guys and gals, for your help. I have some new things coming your way, so make sure you keep an eye on the Patreon site over the next week or so for a new post. And if you're not an Inner Circle member and you want to learn more about it, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can go over to the page, see what's going on, and if you like what you see, maybe you'll become an Inner Circle member as well. These are the folks that support this podcast. They help support the workshop series, and they help support the new things that I want to do for our community. Thanks to all of our Inner Circle members for your support. Coming up on November 9th, we have the Podcasting Skills Course. This is an online course that's going to be on Saturday, November 9th, and I'm going to cover everything that I can think of about podcasting that I have learned since I started this back in 2005. And a lot of things have changed as well. For instance, the whole advertising world and sponsorship world has changed just in the last couple years. So I'm going to give you the benefit of all that knowledge that I have over all this time and all the work that I do to stay current and keeping this podcast alive and well. I'm going to share that information with you. All of the modules will be recorded. You will get them all after the class, and they'll be divided up by topic, which I think is really cool. And even if you can't stay for the whole class on November 9th, you will still get all of the content afterwards. So November 9th, registration is open right now. Just go to thenimblephotographer.com, and you can learn more about it and sign up right there. Go to the workshops page. And finally, be sure to visit our friends at Red River Paper, the good folks that keep our inkjet printers humming along. That's because they provide the ink, they provide the paper, they provide the knowledge, they provide the reviews. Just about anything that you want to know about inkjet printing, you can find at the Red River Paper site. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. They have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper, and they are the longest running sponsor of this podcast. I tip my hat to them, and I can't imagine life without boxes and boxes of Red River Paper in my studio. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. Next week, I think we're going to have a review of the Sony A7R Mark IV. I think I'm just about ready with it. I'll feature that on the podcast. I've got some other goodies that I'm looking forward to. I hope you come back and join me. It's going to be a fun discussion about this killer full sensor mirrorless camera with crazy resolution. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.